and welcome to episode 17 of series 4 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, and Jim Harley, possibly Snowy. We're waiting to see if he does able to join us as we record this live. And Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Jim. We saw each other briefly on Saturday. I think it was Saturday. I don't know what day it is. Anyway, that day.
Yes, it was Saturday, wasn't it? New Year's Eve. That was last year. So Happy New Year to you. I was going to catch up with you after the game, but the game did seem to go on. We'd had quite a few unfortunate stoppages, which I'm sure we'll talk about. So it was a bit of a late finish and I had to dash.
It's, to be fair, very similar. We had to dash off Russ, bless him, was joined me before the game, and we arranged a lift home. So we had to dash off anyway. But as you said, the game did go on a little bit longer than anticipated, and it felt like it had gone on for 5 years by that point anyway. So we'll come to in a minute. We will be talking about the Gloucester win over London Irish, and it is important to note we did win, Jim. Remember that we did win.
Yes, we did.
And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the continued fallout over the Joe Marler Heenan incident, and mainly about Carl Dixon. And I know, Jim, you've got some strong opinions about whether he should be reffing at all in those games, but we'll see. Then finally, just funny, before we started our pod this evening, me and Jim were just chatting about the random inclusion on Sky. Was it what Sky channel was it on? Sky.
Well, it was on Sky Sports Mix, but it was also on Sky Showcase, which I think everyone gets.
Yes, but, I think that's the one everyone gets, whether you got sport or not. And it was the Junior Premier League, which I had mistakenly thought was actually like a Junior Premier League game, as in under 16s or something. But Jim, can you explain to the Cherry Jam audience what it was?
I thought the same. Flicked on as I'm looking through the channels just before we started recording, and I thought, my goodness me, that is a crowd that Irish would be exceptionally proud of at Brentford.
Brentford 16s,
And then I look closely, and it's like, oh, that's Salah, isn't it? I think I recognise some footballers. And that would actually be the proper Brentford against the proper, well, almost the proper Liverpool. And a couple of 11-year-old scousers, by the sound of them, I think, doing the commentary.
Mm.
And clearly, as I flicked on at 90-something, 91 minutes, I think it was, they were just tired, bless them. They've been trying to talk about football for an hour and a half and had run out of things to say. But it kind of brought us on, didn't it, Ed?
It did.
The fact that actually sometimes you don't need to say anything, and some commentators feel obliged to just talk too much, talk absolute gibberish, point out the bloody obvious, and so forth. And actually, I think I did mention to you, you know, a commentator on TV doesn't really need to be doing it for the blind, because, you know, viewers can see. And I'd love to know, actually, whether blind people would just much rather listen to radio commentary, which is obviously having to give that description. And people that do radio commentary are much, you know, better versed at providing that kind of explanation. I mean, I've found it quite good listening to Gloucester commentary on the radio. You do get an idea of where the ball, I mean, I suppose the ball tends to move around a little bit less in rugby, certainly in attacking kind of scenarios, rather than football. It can move from one end of the pitch to the other quite quick, can't it?
I mean, again, we'll come on to that. Might not be the case necessarily with Gloucester, but we'll... But no, I take your point. Yeah, exactly. So Gloucester won on Saturday in a very, very close and tense affair against London Irish, winning 8-6 with a final kick of the game by our hero Santi Carreras. And again, I'm not a little bit annoyed, but I am a little bit annoyed. But I definitely was one of the very, very early adopters of the old Santi Carreras chant. And, you know, Jim, you've been in the shed when it's been going on, and they were doing all sorts of O's, and Louis Rhys Summit. You know, it's O Santi Carreras. It's always been O Santi Carreras.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They were doing it for Cicino. And I was like, no, you can't have a Santi Carreras and a Santi Cicino chance.
I mean, it does scan well.
But look, we've we didn't have one.
We can't have one for four players.
We didn't have one for Carreras. He absolutely deserved one. He got this one. You can't share it around. That's not fair. Come up with a new one for anyone else.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it is annoying. It is probably a bit annoying for the shed, though, for those who do start these chants, that there are three players that it scans perfectly into, which is kind of useful, but I think it's a bit, come on, we can do better than that. You know, we need some Wonderwall Gummersall style chants going again, you know?
And actually we need people to do something on the socials or get Gloucester to put it in their fantastic app so that people actually kind of know it, especially if it's got more than three words.
Don't mention the app. The app doesn't exist anymore. Don't mention the app. Anyway.
It does kind of exist. It just doesn't work.
No. The good news is the Wi-Fi still works, which was a plus on Saturday.
But the Tannoy, I don't know what it was like over your side. My God. Some of the choices, it was just the music. There was a particular track, I can't remember which one it was, but my God, when it started like feedback and just obscene volume noise. And especially where it was, I mean, the shed was a proper sellout.
It was a sellout.
But, you know, it was proper tight, shoulder to shoulder. That was as busy as the shed has been for me for a very, very long time. And I was with, you know, old school friends and their families, and my whole family were there. And half time, just let us talk, please. Stop with all the noise. That was really frustrating. I think I might have to pen an actual proper email rather than a tweet to the club about that, and just sort of plead my case a little bit, because a little bit of background's okay, but that was just mental.
I do feel sorry for the club on this one, because I think they've been promised the world by several companies on the old Tannoys, and we will come on to the game, I promise you. We're not avoiding the game, I honestly promise you. We are going to talk about the game, but they've got sold the world on these Tannoys, and I had a very brief conversation with Lance Bradley at the European evening thing that they had a few weeks ago. And he was mentioning about the Tannoy, and he's like, it's just the most infuriating thing in the world, because, you know, every time we're going to get it sorted, it just doesn't work. And I mean, I did say to him, you could knock down the shed, but I think that's a very drastic response to probably what they need to do. But yeah, I it was fine in the grandstand. I think there are some peculiarities with the shed, but I mean, it's just, yeah, it is odd that they can never get it right. But yeah, coming on to the game itself, the positives, and we have to start with the positives. We won. I mean, that's the biggest positive of all, because that game was very much on a knife edge with the last kick of the game. And then I would say the defence was the other big positive. I thought our defence was very good, I think, generally.
Yeah, I mean, they Irish have got some proper danger men, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
Van Rensburg and Ollie Hassel Collins, I thought, you know, super, super strong players, and was a little bit worried about them.
Mm.
But then they didn't really do a lot. I mean, Hassel Collins especially kind of got, I think he got tackled within two paces every time he got the ball, pretty much. And maybe we had a couple more line breaks than they did that didn't really get very far. But I think, mate, did they have just the one that kind of went?
I think we kicked long. I think Ackerman had a missed tackle in midfield, just got it wrong. And the guy slipped through. I think it was the opposite wing into Hassel Collins, slipped through.
Yeah.
And there was a knock on from that phase. But
generally,
not a huge
it
amount.
Generally, the defence was very solid. And I guess, looking forward, which, you know, we will do a bit in a bit, that's hopeful, because we're going to get more of the same next week. So yeah, it's good that our defence seems to be pretty good. Certainly a huge amount better than at Leicester, where our back line was all kinds of makeshift changes and confusion. So yeah, at least that's been resolved.
Yeah, I mean the advantage I think we had was, and we'll come on to the tactics and the kicking game and the game plan in a minute, but I was surprised a little bit that Irish didn't try to run it back a bit more. You know, it was, they were trying to employ a very similar tactic to us in terms of kick the ball early, kick the ball deep.
I mean, it was the conditions were absolutely, and there's a lot of people moaning on social, moaning in the ground, but the conditions absolutely dictated it was, you know, a game to not have the ball and put pressure on the opposition and make the opposition make mistakes. And I thought our kicking game was significantly better than theirs.
It was, yes.
At least 9 times out of 10, we won
the
kicking duel. Yeah. And so, like you say, you would think as the game progressed, you know, once you've put it out on the full a couple of times, or you've knocked it on and in contact a couple of times, you just think, right, well, let's keep the ball in hand. Let's have a bit of a go. Let's try and get around the edges. And they didn't. But then maybe that's because we didn't let them. I know it's hard to say sometimes.
No, I mean, one thing I did notice from the stand, which you probably don't get the same depth view from the shed, but there were a couple of occasions, particularly in the first half. Second half, I think actually we were generally tighter, and we actually had a little bit more. It's, again, views on these things. I thought we had more control in the second half, but then obviously let them get an opportunity. But in the first half, it was a bit, there was about three occasions where we kicked the ball deep. And actually, if they'd been a bit more heads up, and Paddy Jackson in particular, if he'd looked wide, they had a couple of occasions, at least three or four occasions, actually, where it was 3-on-2, 4-on-2 out wide.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they would have scored, but there was definite opportunities for Irish to go wide. And I was surprised they didn't try it a little bit more. Certainly that first half where, you know, it was kind of, that was the opportunity to do it because that game is still quite an open game at that point.
It's worth the risk when there's still 40 minutes to play, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
40-50 minutes still to go. You can afford taking a bit of a gamble to try and score a try. And they didn't seem to be taking any gambles. I mean, they kicked their 6 points and they were good for that.
They didn't create, I mean, that was the thing. That was why I say the defence was very good, because other than, I can't remember them actually getting into the 22 more than maybe once or twice. And I certainly can't remember them being like on our line.
Their kick chases, I think maybe one of their kick chases put us under a bit of pressure in the 22, or, you know, on that 22 kind of line.
Yeah.
But generally, no. It was just a couple of really silly, sort of couple of silly penalties that we gave away that gave them, you know, the field position in the 22 that gave them the three pointer opportunities.
Yeah, and I'd say the other positive I'd say generally was the pack. Generally, I thought Elrington did well. Kirill did very well. You'd expect him to, you know, they've come in and they've done a job where you were maybe a little bit worried, obviously not playing Val. I don't know if Val's got a knock, but Val's played a lot of rugby recently.
No, he wasn't playing on Saturday because he was getting married.
Ah, right. Oh, no, I do remember you putting this in the group, actually. Yes, you're right. That's it. Because originally it was going to be a week off, wasn't it?
Everyone was told to cancel their holidays, and Val's now wife clearly said, George, Al is not cancelling this one.
No. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's difficult for rugby players. I mean, it's difficult for rugby supporters. We've only got a very narrow band of time to book stuff in. I managed it. I'm just saying that now to Lawrence, that I managed it. I got my wedding in off-season. It was the final day before the start of the season, but I got it in. So it can be done.
Lawrence didn't. He got married at the beginning of the season, didn't he?
Yeah,
and
he
I
did.
didn't. I got married at the end of the season. Missed possibly the best game that King's Home's ever hosted. But there we go. That's what happens.
It's, you know, these are all life lessons, Jim. You know, next time round, you'll know. Yeah. Anyway,
we'll go for a July date.
Exactly. Anyway, but no, I thought the pack generally did all right. We'll sort of move on to the slightly negative side now, which is the mall, which
and in commentary, I haven't heard any commentary from the Irish game, but the Leicester game definitely, the game before that. Healy and other commentators keep going on about Gloucester's mall. And I'm like, our mall's been shit for 6 weeks.
It's been awful.
Right? It started the season brilliantly. Everyone knows about it. All the referees are looking for any potential infringement. And we got pinged a couple of times again for offside or not straight or whatever.
Yeah, jumping in front of the line. Basically, as the jumper comes down, they're landing in front of the ball carrier, aren't they? That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. So the ball carrier isn't the frontmost player to take the impact of the defenders and all that jazz. And we seem to have turned away from the setting it and taking 3 or 4 seconds to set it, maybe concede a few meters, but then have the ball in a really, really good secure position and then go in for the drive. The vast majority of the time now, we just go for the sort of blitz approach, which is why Cicino hasn't been scoring and it's been some of the other players potentially because they're the ones with the ball. The ball hasn't got to the back. And I kind of like that. I like that as a variation. It's a bit like having a shift drive or something like that. You don't give the opposition time to organise their counter drive. You just blast it through. I think the issue with it is that if it does get pulled down, it's a lot harder for the referee to say it was definitely that team pulling it down. I think it's far more likely, as we've had a lot, it ends up being a turnover because it just is deemed unplayable. The couple of times where we have taken our time a little bit more or been slowed down and had a that's once kind of call and then we've gone again. They've got players that they haven't swum, but what they've done is they've come around and defenders in these situations have learnt now. You're not allowed to change your mind, but you don't have to let go. So you just hang around half a millimeter from the scrum half so that as soon as that ball comes out, they're on you and potentially as the ball's coming out, they can be on you and then it ends up being kind of just nullified. I mean, when was the last time we didn't score one from a mall?
That's a good question. I mean, the one thing I would say about the defensive side of it, where I think it was highlighted, I think it might be in the Bath game away last year. And they were highlighting the fact that when the Bath players were trying to defend our mall, they were far too narrow. They were really narrow around where the ball carrier was. Whereas what you needed to be, because of the way that we were driving forward, you needed to be almost wider to then pincer in. And that's the first thing. So if you notice, if you watch, that's one of the reasons why some of these players that look like they're swimming, they're not. It's because they're peeling around the side because they've come in at they're not coming in at an angle because the mall basically as it forms, they're at that angle. They're not like joining the mall from the side. That's the point when the mall forms. Yeah. So they're coming in at like that. You know they're forming from a slightly angled point position, and then they're swimming. Oh, it looks like they're swimming around, but they're not. It's just they're peeling off. And then as you said, as long as they're holding on to the player until the ref tells them to get out, they stay on. And that's where that interference comes. It certainly interferes with the ball being played back to the back of the mall. So either the hooker or the scrum half, it can kind of affect where that player can bind, where that player can shift their weight. The other issue, which, and again, it was from last season, I think it was the Exeter game and then the Quins game fairly quick, closely afterwards, was that every team now, nearly all the time, will put a jumper up because it disrupts us. Because we haven't got, we mentioned it. So I mentioned it with Russ and Loz last week. We don't have that sort of line out general who is able to, I don't know,
just totally boss it. Yeah.
Totally boss it, make himself big. Kind of, even draw a penalty. You know, Itoje is very good at that. Draws a penalty for being someone getting in the air and getting near him or getting his arm on him or something.
I think that would work. Actually, you say about them setting up in that way. Mm. If we did do some sort of shift drive where the jumper catches the ball and then passes it back to another little pod.
Well, that's what Itoje did against Exeter this weekend.
Yeah,
really
so that
good,
kind of
really good play.
That point of attack is in a slightly different spot, then that would potentially disrupt them a little bit more. And that's something that it probably requires a little bit more line out skill than we've kind of shown. Maybe the line out itself, I'm talking about. I think we're probably still getting used to McGuigan's throwing, and we're going to have to get used to it a lot more.
Well, yeah, we'll come on to that. Yeah.
So it's these things that, you know, if our hookers do have slightly different throwing styles, it just makes it a little bit more
timing.
Awkward.
It's the timing issue, isn't it? I mean, I noticed it. I noticed it on Saturday. The ball's not coming up. You know, when you look at say Cicino or Singleton, where you've had 2 years or whatever of playing with them. The timing's a little bit more accurate, and you're picking it at the top of its height at the arc, rather than maybe a little bit later or a little bit earlier, which makes the whole next phase of the maul a little bit off, and it then just carries on, doesn't it? But I mean, the McGuigan one is the other thing I did ever think about, which was I wonder if from McGuigan's point of view coming in mid-season, you'd imagine that Newcastle would have done some work in terms of their work on how to defend against the Gloucester Maul. So you'd hope McGuigan would have remembered some of that and maybe parted that on to the team, because that would be a useful thing, just to, you know, an opposition player coming in now mid-season for us and going, well, this is what we were thinking, actually, how to combat your Maul. So what we need to do now is trying to then think, well, that's what the opposition are thinking. What do we need to do? I mean, I'm sure the coaches are doing that, but it's useful to have a player's point of view.
Yeah, and kind of on that, actually, how much are Newcastle going to have to change their calls and things like that?
Mm.
Because he's now left. And there's a couple of players that went out of contract yesterday, if free agents or retired or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, what's to stop Gloucester that are, you know, we're playing Sale whenever, and you go, oh, Joe, ex-Gloucester boy, don't suppose you fancy being an assistant on this one and just telling us everything you know about Sale for 5 minutes? You know, it's kind of, it's how much do you tell your players in advance, kind of thing? You know, do you change your line? I wouldn't know. Do you change your line-out calls every couple of months just in case words got out? Things like that. Certainly, if you've played a team once, when you played them the second time, you would think that you've tweaked it a little bit, because whatever they've gathered the first time round, they might have written down and tried to remember.
Well, I mean, McGuigan scored 2 tries against us for Newcastle only a few months ago. Mm. So there's hopefully a little bit of work that you can do there. And you're right, you know, there's going to be lots of teams that, for example, Newcastle there, when we go up to there in end of Feb, I think, isn't it? He'll have a massive insight into where how they work, and they're definitely going to have to change the calls and all the rest of it. I think, wasn't there a famous one where was it the calls? It was, I'm sure England were playing Ireland. Keith Wood worked out that the calls were the same as the ones at Quinn's. And he just went, oh, it's that then. And he told him, Ireland just kept picking our line out. I'm sure that's the one. But it was basically something like that. Or it was the same calls that they were doing in the Lions. It was something stupid and ridiculous that. Because
I've
you know.
I've played in a team that does these before.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but there we go. So moving on to the hooker situation, obviously now, yes, unfortunately, Jack Singleton's out for the season, and then Santi Cecino looks pretty bad. Although I don't know, I mean, he called immediately for the medical team, and was stretchered off,
and went to A&E.
And went to A&E immediately. Now, I think it might be another knee or ankle again. I don't think it was a break. I think it was ligaments, as in your knee or your leg gets trapped.
Yeah, I think it looked a little bit knee to me. The way he went down, just in a couple of replays I've seen, but then it's so hard to tell, just from, because you can have one pretty innocuous, oh, that looks all right, and you've peledred your knee, and then you can have another one that looks absolutely horrendous, and you're like, oh my god, the twist there, and you get up and you go, oh, that was a little bit, and then you just run it off and don't seem to suffer a problem. So, you know, it is a lot of luck with these things, or lack of,
yeah. I mean, it does mean that our decision to sign George McGuigan mid-season looks inspired, and it just means that George McGuigan's going to have to play pretty much every minute from now till the end of the season.
Which, if he can stay fit, isn't as bad as it very easily could have been.
Yeah, just hope he doesn't get called up for England. Yeah, otherwise, we are screwed.
Because he's pretty good. I mean, Daradic's still knocking about in Gloucester. Maybe he can put his boots back on. I don't know how many Premiership standard hookers there are kind of going spare.
Well, we've got, in terms of what we've got left in the team, we've got Henry Walker, who can play hooker. And then in terms of, so he's what I would call senior, he's our senior squad. And then in academy, we've got, I'm just looking at myself, I'm not even, promise, they've changed the website and it doesn't tell you who the academy players are anymore, like they used to. So I actually don't know offhand who our...
But we're talking kids with 0 to 1.
Literally,
or 2, maybe.
Yeah. Let's be honest, they would have played in the Premiership Cup.
Yeah. And they probably wouldn't have played a huge amount of minutes in that, because that was kind of Henry Walker's bag, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to do some research while we're talking, to see if I can find who was our hooker.
Our hookers for those games, and hookers on the bench. Because it's a worrying situation. I mean, obviously, if it was back rows, we've got a list of back rows as long as your arm, and the fact that there are three back rows on the pitch, you would hope, unless Tuasu is playing, in which case there's probably only two on the pitch at any one time. Then you know, you can kind of go, right, we'll put one of the kids in the back row, and the other two can kind of look after them. Whereas you are pretty much on your own as hooker. Obviously, scrum time, you're not quite so much, but line out, that is a huge amount that you as the hooker needs to get right, your timing and your throw, and if you don't, then that really, you know, potential kind of 5 meter, 10 meter line out just goes away. So
yeah, so it was in against Exeter, it was Seb Blake, who is, I believe, very well regarded and well thought of within
our squad,
but you're asking a hell of a lot, aren't you? Let's be honest. And then I think, is it Finn Theobald Thomas? Is he the lad? Is he a prop, or is he? I think he's a hooker, isn't he? And he is, he's a hooker, and he's the lad we signed from Worcester, young academy guy Worcester. So yeah, they're basically our backup at this point. So, but it's a great opportunity for Seb Blake and Theobald Thomas to make a claim, because you know there are spaces that, you know, Henry Walker is now going to have to deputise. That's going to be his role. you know, and if he's not in form or McGuigan gets called up or gets injured or God forbid, we've got then one of the other lads is going to have to step up. And
yeah, or you know, it's just another game like we're playing Leinster or something and you decide to rotate the squad.
I don't think they'll rotate it at home, Jim.
I don't think they'd be allowed.
I think there will be a riot if they did, particularly for the prices they're selling the tickets at. I know what you mean though. But yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Hooker.
Whether we can go shopping again, because obviously medical joker if we have lost Cicino for
we've still got the Argentinian prop to join us. Because he got injured, didn't he, signed him, Mako Vivas. So that's another player that's been crocked before we even actually managed to play. So we'll see when he joins. And that hopefully, I was under the impression that he was expected to be available relatively soon. Now, I haven't seen or heard anything since, but... You know, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens there.
Maybe he's about 2 weeks away, something like that.
2 weeks away, yeah, agreed. But again, this is where, from a supporter's point of view, it would be useful to know who the hell's available, because we've lost two of our key props in the last few weeks. We've lost two of our hookers. It would be useful to know. I think Jamal said he reckons he's back sort of end of Feb.
Oh, really? That's soon.
That's the expected time for him.
Well, that is good news.
But again, that's reliant on everything going well and training going well and no setbacks and stuff in recovery and all these things. So, you know, hopefully that will sort that. So again, because otherwise we're gonna have to beast Val for the next couple of months. And the way he's playing, you'd expect him again to be in the England squad, realistically.
Absolutely. Well, did you see rugby tonight?
Yeah.
And he is the form player of the entire league. For the whole season so far,
yes.
He's got more opta points or whatever they are now than anyone else, and I'm like, yeah, I can go with that.
Yeah,
and Balmain was in there as well.
Balmain was in there as well, and you think, and I mean, it's only because you think Carreras has had a good season, and he wasn't even mentioned really, was he? So
I'm guessing probably because he's been at wing at fullback. Fly half, and if you're dealing with points for positions, which that particular topic was kind of dealing, he's probably not gathered enough points in any one specific position. But you would think if you just kept him at fullback, he'd be right up there.
Yeah, agreed. Other thing on the Irish game, just a little note on the conditions. Now, look,
it was raining.
It was raining, and I know that makes the ball slippy. I'm well aware of that, having played in conditions similar to that myself on many occasions. It's not fun to play in. However, when I was playing in those conditions, we were also playing on a bog, and they weren't playing on a bog. They were playing on a beautiful
carpet.
Perfect AstroTurf that doesn't, you know, the bounce is the bounce. It's not going to go. You're not going to slip. You know, it's AstroTurf. So I do have a bit of sympathy for the argument that, yeah, I know it was slippy and with the ball in hand. I get that. You might drop it a few times, but it's not the first time these lads would have played rugby in the rain.
No, it was. I mean, I know it was. I know I'm comparing it now to the end of a game rather than a whole game, but the end of that Harlequins Northampton game, they were throwing the ball around with pretty good skill, and it was raining 10 times harder than it was raining at King's Home. I mean, it was properly belting it down for that period. So it is possible, I guess, the confidence of playing fantastically for 70 minutes means you can kind of carry on doing it when it starts raining for 10, maybe.
True. That's a fair point. I think the weird thing that happened on Saturday was that normally one side will try it every so often and neither side did. I mean, and again, the game plan, Jim, we'll kind of finish our review of the Irish game on this and the game plan itself, but I understand the game plan, and I understand entirely kicking the ball in your own half or kicking, certainly when you're in 22, there's not a lot to be gained from trying to run it out from your 22 in conditions like that. And the ironic thing was when the crowd were booing me in for the two box kicks that ended up leading to the penalty that won the game, I understand the booing because you're thinking, well, look, we've got 2 minutes on the clock, 2.5 minutes on the clock. Why are you giving them the ball back? And then he puts in probably the two best box kicks followed by the best chases of the game to win the ball back twice and then win a penalty. But it wasn't like that was the first time we kicked the ball. That was, was it 40? I did get the stats up earlier. We kicked the ball 45 times from hand. Irish kicked it 38. We made one clean break.
How many breaks they make?
One.
how many knock-ons?
It doesn't tell you the knock-ons. It tells you I've got meters gained.
Handling errors.
No, I didn't do that. I haven't got the full-on stats, but the meters gained, we made 246 meters gained. Now, I don't know if that means kicking and running. I'm assuming it's that's quite
should
a low.
That should be ball in hand.
That's quite a low figure. So we'll assume that that's going to be ball in hand. We had 113 carries. So it's very, you got 113 carries and 246 meters gained. That's very attritional. And we made 114 passes, 45 kicks from hand. I think that tells you a lot about the game generally, about how Gloucester played it. And again,
there seem to be a lot of like the back line sort of just our standard double stack, the attack line, and just passing it out the back, and we go across the length of the pitch, concede 5 meters. We do it again, we concede another 5 to 10 meters. We do it again, we concede another 5 meters, and then we box kick it back to where we started, and sometimes we get a turnover. And we get the ball back, and other times they'd have the ball, and then they'd kick it back.
Well, and the joke was, the joke was, Jim, that didn't happen on Saturday. I think I lost count of how many times after a phase we went straight, not even a phase, we would win the ball back, and then we would just box kick it back. There wasn't even a phase to go, oh, we'll have a look outside, we'll just test their defensive setup,
especially with a turnover ball.
Yeah, you know, nothing at all. And then the number, I mean, again, we're kicking the ball from a box kick. That's a different issue. It's when we've got the ball in hand coming into their 22 and we're kicking, we're trying grubbers, we're trying, I don't, just keep the ball in hand and then reset. If you're worried that you are going to get turned over, I totally understand that maybe in those situations,
just kicking in the corner,
kicking the ball in the corner, grubber, get it. But we're not even, they weren't, for the most part, those weren't the ones that people were moaning about. It was the ones where actually
there was
we were
dropping it on the foot
and
just kicking it into opposition ankles. And then, oh, you've picked it up or you've fallen on it and you've just turned the ball over. I'm just like, well, it happened. Actually, happened in the Harlequins game yesterday that I was watching. You know, it was like a kick, and it's like, that's a charge down. He's like, you can't charge that down. So, well, yeah, you can. Doesn't have to be a box kick type scenario to charge it down. You're kicking from hand while running, and he's a meter from you, and it's come off his face, his arms, his body, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's regathered it. He doesn't have to catch it clean. And you just think, why are you doing that? If it was a good calculated grubber kick through or chip over the top, you know, brilliant. But they were just poor decisions at times. And actually, there were a couple of times, especially on turnover, and there was one I think of, must have been second half. And you think their forwards had run, their back, I think winger and fullback had sort of run it back up. So there is no one in that.
There was no one back, no.
And you think that is the perfect time, especially for Meehan, who's got a really good kick. He could have just done a long box kick straight from that ruck and put it right down. I mean, and you don't have to go for the 5 meter line, because just go for the 50-22.
Yeah.
And we'll get the ball back in a really good position. And if you put it down in that area with a decent chase, as we've seen quite a few times, then the person who's covering is kind of like, well, it's going to be a 50-22 anyway, and they don't feel quite so bad about, especially in those conditions, jumping on it and just sliding out with it, just to make sure we don't get another chip on it and take it to the line. So I can't disagree with our game plan. I think the game plan of not having the ball, I mean, if there was a stat for knock-ons or handling errors, I'm pretty sure we'd have probably had about a third the number that the Irish did, which kind of goes with we kicked it a little bit more than they did. So that was good. I'm just really, really nervous that we don't seem to have any idea with attack.
No.
And it is concerning. It's obviously not that point in the season where you need to be super exciting in attack. It is winter. It's the time of the season to do exactly as we did, win games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of nerve-wracking because we are fourth in the table, and I think we're fourth in the table because everyone else around us is a bit rubbish too.
Yeah. Other than the Saracens and Sale, I mean, I think Sale are an interesting one, because I think Sale are flattering to I think they're flattering to deceive them. I think they are a good side. I'm not disputing they're a good side. I just think they're not as good as people are making out. And I think there are a few injuries away from having not a lot to back up.
They've probably got one of the better first 15 squads and the worst kind of squads, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
When you chuck in England internationals and just internationals in general and a couple of injuries, yeah, I think they might start having to struggle a little bit.
I mean, one thing you would say is that George Ford's not played for him yet, from what I understand. I can't remember him playing yet for them. So there is still a player there.
He's got a point to prove.
He's a player to come back and the rest of it. But I just think, I'm sure we proved entirely wrong and they'll end up really winning it. But my view is that their squad, it does seem quite thin. I do wonder what will happen if they do get a few injuries and whether they can sustain it. But final thing on the Irish game, as you said, Jim, I'm pleased we won. I think the game plan probably was right. Obviously we won, but let's be honest, it was a razor edge thing where we got a penalty at the end.
We were bloody, bloody lucky. And Irish, I mean, God, how many games have they lost like that this season? How many losing bonus points have they got in games that they very, very easily could have won? They were down the bottom of the table. They're kind of somewhere.
They're near the bottom. I think they're bottom three, aren't they?
Ninth or something like that, which is bottom three now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they could, I'm sure, if you look at those games that they've narrowly lost, if they'd have narrowly won, you could probably put them second, which I know you could probably say with a few other teams as well. But they really have been unlucky coming out with a lot of very close losses, which is good for Gloucester to not be on, you know, that side of it, and to kind of put a team that maybe has that in the back of their mind under a bit of pressure. We've traditionally been that team that loves to give confidence back to those underconfident teams. And hopefully we can kind of carry on not doing that and taking advantage of teams that are low on confidence. And maybe in that last 5 minutes of a game like we had, where I think Irish must have been kind of just having that, oh God, are we going to lose this one again? Rather than, the likes of Saracens, who just have that, we're going to win. I know there's only a minute to go, but we're still going to win.
Yeah.
And that kind of focused expectation that what they do will be good enough, because they're going to give it everything. So, yeah, We'll see. We'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully it won't be pissing it down with rain next time.
Hopefully. Right, we're going to pause now. We're going to talk about the ongoing issue regarding Joe Marler, and more from a viewpoint of Carl Dixon and his lack of acknowledgement of what actually happened on the day. And then Jim's got a couple of points around that. And then some other ideas of how stupid ideas that could definitely encourage people to come and watch rugby, including 11-year-olds doing commentary.
This is Jamal Ford Robinson, and you are listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
What was that?
Right, we're back, and we're going to talk about the Joe Marler incident and the continued fallout from it, because when myself, Loz and Russ spoke last week, we didn't know specific details of what was said. There was some rumours flowing around about what Joe Marler had kind of referenced, but nothing was particularly clear. Then a video has been leaked subsequently, which has actually got the audio and then the subtitles of what was exactly said. Joe Marler got a 2-week ban. It was actually a 6-week ban, but 4 weeks suspended. And has been banned for 2 weeks. And it's interesting because there was a lot of stuff that was put on Twitter and social media immediately after the incident, and some people had obviously clearer idea what was said at that point. There's been another load of stuff that's come out afterwards, and where people now have got a clear idea what it was said. Jim, just get your first of all your opinion on the whole incident as a whole. What's your view on it?
My view at the time was that's Marler being Marler, you know, and he's a player that's quite renowned for, you know, sledging, really, isn't it? It's just, you know, goading oppositions, players, getting, especially like, you know, pre-scrum, things like that. You know, you try and get in their head, that's going to make them not think about their processes. It's going to make them weaker as a scrummager. Or, you know, he was a flanker, so, you know, just doing something wrong. And, you know, if it causes a reaction, then you can end up, you know, potentially having a player getting a yellow card or something. So it's part of rugby. And I said at the time, I said, well, as long as you don't say anything with a protected characteristic, which he has been done for in the past.
Yeah.
Then yeah, you know, if you want to call someone an idiot, if you want to, you know, say you've got hands like cow's tits or whatever, you know, whatever it may be, you know, the Shed do it plenty, you know, giving the old donkey chance and stuff like that, don't they? So it's all these things that kind of make rugby what it is, because after the game, you shake hands and you go, yeah, did I get under your skin a little bit? You know, how did that work? You know, cricket, obviously, it's huge, that, you know, wicket keepers, that's their kind of half their job, isn't it? Trying to get into the heads of a batsman. So I'm, without knowing too much of the details, I was like, well, it seemed pretty fair game to me. And then hearing all the details, I'm like, righto, well, in hindsight, Joe Marler could have gone, oh yeah, didn't realise your mum was ill. Sorry, mate. But at the time, you don't, you know, when you do your research on opposition players, you work out what their scrum technique is, what their throwing technique is, what their tackle technique is, all these sorts of things. You don't go looking into their close family members and finding out whether they're in hospital or not based on, you know, what you can and can't say to them. And I don't, and let's say his mum was fine. Would the RFU, would the social media fraternity, would all that, would it have, would they have felt about it any differently? And I think the answer is definitely yes. There wouldn't have been the uproar about it if his mum was sat at home watching on TV, perfectly healthy. And I don't think it's right that actually, it might be terrible that she's suffering with cancer and in hospital, but that's actually irrelevant to the situation, because otherwise you're kind of setting a really dangerous precedent for what you can and can't do on a rugby pitch. Because so, it makes it impossible for a referee to make a decision. Because if he's been banned for 2 weeks, so does that mean it should have been a red card?
Well, so we'll come on to the Carl Dixon and his responsibilities, etc., in a second. Just want to quickly say I do agree somewhat with what you're saying. There's no way I think that Joe Marler intentionally meant to upset Jay Keenan by referencing his mum. There's no way in a million years, realistically, that Joe Marler knew the situation, specific situation with Jay Keenan's mum. That I think is a fairly clear statement. I think even Jay Keenan probably would accept that. And it all comes from the fact that Jay Keenan called Joe Marler brother, and you know that's a type of phrase that's used probably slightly more in New Zealand than it is in the UK, and there's all these different things, cultural differences, etc. But my only disagreement with you on this one, Jim, is I agree with you entirely. When you're calling somebody, you're useless, you've got hands like cow's tits, you're a donkey, blah, 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 all this stuff. And you're talking to somebody and you're not referencing any, as you say, protected characteristics as, say, Joe Marler did with Samson Lee, for example. But, you know, you're not using anything around his race or his gender or, you know, his sexual preferences, etc. All of that is out of bounds. We can all agree with that. I think once you step over where you're not talking about that individual and you're talking about a family member or something that's slightly, you're not 100% sure what you're talking about, I think you're in dangerous territory yourself anyway. And I think I agree with what you're saying that, you know, the ban seems to have come from the fact that Jay Keenan's mum is unwell. And that's what's caused the incident. However, probably the fact he referenced his mum anyway and called her a whore, I think, let's be honest, that probably should have resulted in a ban as well. I think that's out. I think anything like that, you're crossing over a line. That's in my opinion, and I'm happy to, you know, we'll have difference of opinions there. But I just think that you're stepping over a line there where you don't know that person's situation.
Was it actually bringing the game into disrepute that he got his...
Well, I think it was.
Is that what he got called up on?
I think it was something along those lines, wasn't it? It was bringing
the game into disrepute, and then there were a couple of other kind of things that it...
Conduct prejudicial to the game, which is bringing the game into disrepute, which is the football terminology, I suppose. But yeah.
For me, it's a bit too grey. That's all. I'd like... Mm. If you're going to get that as a law, let's just make it a little bit more clear and black and white. Because otherwise, you've got the potential for referees being put under more pressure, actually, during live play. You'll have a captain saying, well, that should have been picked up on the ref's mic. Can you get the TMO to have a listen to that, please? And what we don't want is more stoppages. I'm all for referees maybe putting things on report, a bit like they do in league. And actually, this Marler situation is exactly what's happened, isn't it? Something's been said. Whether Dixon heard it and chose not to hear it or didn't hear it.
Well, yeah, let's come on to that then. So the Dixon side of things. Now, Carl Dixon, we'll come on to your specific issue with Carl Dixon refereeing Quinns in a second. But in this particular incident, Jay Keenan references the fact that Joe Marler said this to Jay Keenan twice in the space of a couple of seconds. Carl Dixon was stood a couple of feet away, if that. And Joe Marler is saying this across a scrum. It's not like, and there's other noises, and, you know, Jay Keenan can hear Joe Marler. And I know, you know, the ways that voices project is slightly different. But from Jay Keenan's testimony in the hearing, it's pretty clear that Jay Keenan thought that Carl Dixon heard it. Mm-hmm. Now, I stuck on Shedweb that it's good news for Carl Dixon, because not only do Specsavers do home visits, they also do hearing tests. So that's useful for Carl Dixon, I think, going forward. But I find it difficult to believe that Carl Dixon didn't hear it. He didn't hear it there and then. Fair enough if he didn't. And I think the way he dealt with it probably was the best he could have dealt with it at the time. In the look, accepting that, say, I didn't hear it. We need to calm down. The fact that he gave a the fact he gave a penalty, despite several players saying that's what he said. You know, I don't know. It's difficult. Anyway, your views on Carl Dixon refereeing Quinn's games.
It was questioned. I think it might have even been before kickoff.
Yeah.
It was certainly referenced during the game and immediately after kickoff quite a lot by a few of the kind of rugby insider and other kind of journalists on Twitter. And my take on it is I don't think Chris White ever refereed at King's Home. He might have at the
He never refereed Gloucester.
Did he referee?
Never refereed us home or away. Refused to do so. Yeah.
And that was because he said, "I'm a Gloucester supporter." I'm,
yeah, he stood in the shed as a kid.
Yeah, and I think you could maybe say Wayne Barnes was never really a Gloucester supporter.
No, I don't think he was.
Yeah. I think he probably quite liked Gloucester to do well, being from the county. But maybe, you know, if he's not a Gloucester supporter, then fair enough. But it wasn't until quite late on in Wayne's refereeing career that he started refereeing Gloucester and certainly coming to King's Home, I believe.
I'm pretty sure you know. I think he refed Gloucester fairly early on, Jim. I'll find out the stats, but I'm pretty sure that he's always ref Gloucester and there's never been any issues. I think.
Okay.
I think from you know the Chris White thing was very peculiar because there's been plenty of incidences where referees who've been supporters or been well known to have connections with clubs to ref those clubs afterwards.
Yes.
I don't think it's you know, I don't necessarily have an issue with it, but there were very few where they played 150 times for that club.
Over 160 caps in 8 years he was a Quinn. And the fact that he was, you know, he played alongside Danny Kerr, him and Danny
and
Kerr,
Joe Marler.
Yeah, him and Danny were vying for that 9 shirt at the same time.
Yeah.
And so whether they are best of mates or worst of enemies or neither, my personal take on it is there's no need for him to referee that game. There's a pool of referees and you could nominate another referee to fulfill Harlequin's fixtures. And I'm not saying for a moment that he would be doing anything consciously against the laws. You know, he wouldn't be biased in any way, but subconsciously, that, and I think it probably even goes the other way.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Does it go the other
subconsciously,
way as well?
You over penalise, you know, the team you would think you have bias towards. So it just what is the point? Just remove that potential for him coming under any scrutiny. I mean, you could understand it maybe if, and I think there were train strikes actually that day, but you know, if there was a huge issue with transport and he lived around the corner from the stoop and you go, well, do you know what? Let's, because we're struggling to get our referees moved around the country. You know, there's ice and snow everywhere or what have you. But I just don't see the need for it. And it just seems a bit silly. That's just my opinion on it.
Well, no, it's good. I think it's interesting because it is very different. I mean, one thing we should say, it's very different from saying Carl Dixon refereeing Quinns is not the same as the club president for, I don't know, Long Levens refereeing a Long Levens versus Coney Hill match, or you know, that sort of stuff that we used to have to come up against when we were playing local rugby. You'd have lads, yes, who were the, you know, they might, we were playing seconds or thirds and we might have the first team captain refereeing us. And it was farcical. I mean, let's be honest, it was downright cheating at times. So, you know, we're not talking at that level. This is, as you say, it's the concern that there may be a subconscious bias and that means that he's more likely to favour one side or the other because he either feels there is that favouritism because it's his club, or the going against it because he doesn't want to be seen to be a favourite of that club. Maybe it's because it's a particularly unique situation where Carl Dixon played a lot of rugby for Quins at a very high level.
I don't think we're going to see Nick Wood refereeing at Kingsholm.
Not in the Premiership. He has refed it in the A-League, as we've been there on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, but then the A-League is, you know, going to be a little bit more transporty, kind of who's closest. I think they'll look into that. They won't be sending referees from down Exeter up to Newcastle to referee A-League games, will they?
No. And you're right. I wouldn't expect Nick Wood to do so. But then equally, if Carl Dixon can ref Quinn's games, and if Nick Wood says, look, I'm fine, I can ref the Gloucester game, I don't feel any bias, I'm a professional, he's got it, you know, he's going to, it's not, again, these guys go through a lot of training, they go through a lot of stuff about, you know, they're not just, you've got a refereeing course badge now, you can go off and ref any old game. There is a bit of stuff underneath it. So I'm of the same opinion of you, Jim. I think generally there's probably no need for Carl Dixon to ref the Quins games unless there is a specific weird transport need where you need to do it. I think it just puts a lot of pressure on him one way or the other. Maybe if we want, and the one thing we keep saying is it would be great to see more and more players become referees. Well, that potentially could cause an issue if these players can't ref.
I did joke like Andy Goode. Well, he wouldn't be able to referee any game.
No, he wouldn't. No, he'd be screwed. Wouldn't he?
I mean, how many teams has he not played for? Like on the off
Gloucester,
Gloucester and.
Hang on, let's see. Gloucester, Bristol. He hasn't played for Bristol.
There you go. So he can play one fixture, you know, two fixtures a season.
Gloucester, he didn't play for Bath. So Gloucester, Bristol, Bath, Exeter. He can do all the West Country ones, but anyone else he can't do it. No.
So yeah, there are a few exceptions, but then he's got into commentary and doing a very good job of that. So.
Very good is a strong word. But anyway, yeah, he's doing his commentary. That's true.
But I think the life after rugby kind of thing is you know really important, isn't it? That, you know, you don't get to play rugby forever. It's a short career, and I don't know how much refereeing the guys do. Is, you know, it's certainly the academy lads that are at Hartbury or wherever, you know, are they doing? I think they're
so they
doing
do, yeah.
refereeing
so I,
courses.
They do refereeing courses. I believe Chris White leads it. I believe White leads it at Cartbury. I'm sure there's some connection there. He helps with that. But you're right. There has to be something after the rugby. Now, the options, I suppose, are coaching, fitness and that sort of stuff. You know, the health and fitness
style
of thing.
That's what Davidic's gone into, isn't he? Yeah. His personal trainer. So, yeah, there's that. If you can kind of stay in the sports arena but leave rugby and do that kind of thing. But you would think we've got Christoph Ridley on. I think, is he still on the back of some buses for the University of Gloucestershire?
I think so. Yeah,
you know, it is a realistic career choice for some people, not ex-professional rugby players, but just people that take to refereeing and are quite good at it. They go, do you know what? If I really go at this, I could be a professional referee. And I think that's fantastic, but you should also have, and I'd love to know how many of our academy lads do referee on a Sunday, for example, you know, because if you've got these kids that aren't getting a huge amount of game time because there's no A-League or there's no Premiership Cup or whatever, you think, well, actually, getting onto a rugby pitch and practicing some of those refereeing skills that they have learned, but maybe don't put into practice as often as I think they do. That would be really good because there are definitely going to be quite a few of those academy lads that don't make it. And they might, even before they don't make it, go, do you know what? Actually, It's not that I prefer doing it. I just really like it, and I think I've got a far greater chance of making it going that route. And, you know, a bit like you might say, oh, I don't really like propping. I really want to be a back row. But actually, I'm quite good at propping, so I'm just going to concentrate on that. You know, there's a lot of players kind of have those decisions to make, don't they, early in their careers? So it could be another one just to throw in the mix, because we need more better referees for certain.
We do. I mean, I think generally, and we notice it specifically, I think when we have European games and we end up with URC refs, they're not necessarily the most consistent. I actually think we probably bemoan the standard refereeing in this country, but actually if you compare it to, shall we say, the URC, I think our refereeing standards are very good generally. I think certainly the refereeing standard and the mistakes and errors that are made, and because it's a human, you know, they're human errors, they're very, very far and few between. You know, the fact you've got the TMO that's there to sort of protect them as well a little bit, but actually even then the decisions they make on the field, it's rarely that the TMO overturns that. I think the only one I can think of is the Ben Earls one, which then got overturned in at the tribunal, which is quite ironic. So actually, you know, he was probably right in the first case. Anyway, that's by the by. But yeah, I think it's important. I don't mind Carl Dixon as a ref. I don't think he's the strongest ref in the Premiership, but he's got international games recently. He's consistently getting Premiership games. So obviously we know nothing.
He's fit enough to keep up with play. And I think that is a massive, massive importance because I think that's something that that Wayne Barnes has kind of alluded to a little bit, that he doesn't want to retire yet. He wants to go to the World Cup. He's hoping to be picked to go to the World Cup. But to be able to referee at that level, you have got to be able to keep up with play. And play is not slowing down.
No, it's getting quicker and quicker and quicker. And it's the length of play as well, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Go on.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, who was refereeing yesterday?
The Quinns Northampton game. I don't know who it was now.
But kind of really, really good at trying to encourage quick play and hurry the nines and reduce ruck time and make the game a greater spectacle. And kind of if a referee is doing that, you know the referee is fit enough to be able to deal with the consequences of doing it. So I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, agreed. So in terms of the final bits of it, actually, final thing on the ref, actually, I mean, gone are the days that you'd turn up at, I mean, Jim, you're aware of these days, but remember when the ref came down with the Newcastle coach, or he actually traveled on the Newcastle coach, there was the Ed Morrison, there was a game where I think it was Ed Morrison and it was a Bath Cup game, and he decided not to play any injury time at all. I think he actually called up early, blew up early. There were the referees that if you were at home and he was the ref, you knew you were going to win, even if you were playing a really good side, because every decision would be influenced by the crowd. And you get the decision. Yeah. And equally, if you're away, you just knew that it was nothing. Every 50-50 was going to go to the home side because the crowd would shout and they would give the decision. Gone are the days of those levels of ref. You know, these guys are professionals. They know what they're doing. They get the way that they're monitored and the way that they're assessed means that you, even if you have one bad game, you're going to miss the next four or five games and not going to get picked for it. And now with less teams, you know, there's two games a week which are being missed, and you know these guys aren't getting the games.
Well, yeah, that's a good point actually. I hadn't thought of that. So have there been any redundancies in the kind of refereeing?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Sure.
What's his name? He got kind of laid off, didn't he?
And well, JP Doyle. He went
JP
to America.
Doyle,
didn't
yeah.
He
went off to America for a bit. And you know, I think he's working with their refereeing association or something. You know, doing some stuff, trying to improve things out there. But yeah, there's definitely less games to officiate, aren't there?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it's harder to do it now. right, final thing of the pod. Stupid things to encourage people to watch rugby. I'm not suggesting that 11-year-olds commentating on rugby games will be the solution. But we did mention, we referenced, though, before we started the pod, about the fan zone on Sky Sports football years ago. Maybe that's what they should have. BT Sports should have, like on the red button, you can scan across and you can hear people like us talking about the game live.
And like we talked, you know, before we started recording, you wouldn't want to listen to it for the duration of the game.
I don't think you want to listen to it at all, but anyway, but yes.
They did it during the World Cup, didn't they? You know, and post-match, here we go. And do you want to hear how the Argentinian commentators reacted to this? You know, and it is really quite entertaining.
For about a minute,
because you know, we are quite kind of blessed, aren't we? You know, with BBC and ITV or Channel 4 or 5 or Sky or BT, they're generally very impartial with their refereeing. Sorry, not with their refereeing,
with their commentary.
That is clearly not the case.
No,
in some other countries. And I guess that's fine, because if you're Argentinian, you want to be cheering with the Argentinian commentators. And I guess it's not quite so not quite so like that over here. We've got a lot of people supporting a lot of different nations.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never really understood, because we are very peculiar, actually, when it comes to the rugby. Well, any sport commentary, I think the only time where you do see it a little bit more biased is during the Olympics. And I think you're right, Jim. It's because the Olympics is representing all of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And during other events, because of the weird idiosyncrasies of sport and the fact we invented them all, that we've got our individual nations. And therefore, it would seem odd. And maybe slightly frustrating for somebody who is a Scottish person watching England play in the quarterfinal of the World Cup for that commentator to be particularly
pro-English. I think if you were listening to S4C, they'd probably be very pro-Welsh, wouldn't they? But then
you've got to understand what the hell they're saying in the first place, Jim. So that is a challenge. I mean,
you know. I think it is notable, like during the Six Nations, that, you know, they do get people. And lots of ex-players, don't they, from all the different nations. And they get the likes of Ben Kaiser, is it? You know, the incredibly...
Oh, yeah, Benjamin Kaiser, yeah, from France, yeah.
Incredibly well-spoken Frenchman. He's got better English than I have. You know, and so they get these guys doing commentary that have a bit more insight into their own nation, but they are still very, very impartial, which is brilliant. But I do think... having some sort of live feed in the shed for playback post try and other such would be just fantastic. It would give just another angle to BT's. Yeah. Maybe I'll have to hashtag rugby tonight and give it as an option.
It would add to the rich tapestry of the commentary and coverage. One thing that's been mentioned to it, I've been asked it several times since we started this podcast, is are we ever going to do a live stream, like watching a game? And the biggest issue is that not all of us live, well, Snowy obviously lives up north, and the technology would defeat me, let alone everybody else. So,
well, if we get the four of us in the same room,
that becomes a more of an issue.
We could have a Zoom call with ourselves. Could we?
I think you can live stream on YouTube. You could have a watch along on YouTube or something.
But then of course we couldn't, because we don't have the broadcasting rights for the thing itself. So even if we were having the audio in the background, then that would probably break YouTube rules and stuff like that, wouldn't it?
What you do now, Jim, though, is you do what the Arsenal Fan TV people, and this is one of the reasons why I've always said no, is that I don't want to become the rugby equivalent of Arsenal Fan TV. It's hysterical when they lose, but there's only so much you can go with that. But what you do is you have the camera facing you while you're watching a Gogglebox.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I'm not entirely sure how entertaining that would be.
But it would probably take about as much editing as the highlights for the other night's game required.
Well, this is the thing, though, because the idea generally is to have it as a live stream. Now, that's more of a challenge. The editing actually would be quite easy because you just edit everything out that Loz and Russ say because it would just be swearing. but maybe trying to sort of dim the sound when one of them goes to the loo. But the so that's probably the easy bit there. But for the rest of the time, it's just a case of seeing the reaction to what we're watching. So my suggestion on this was, as I've now moved house and I have a living room that's capable of hosting more than two people at a time, that the England-Wales game...
Off.
I know. Hardly a show-off, just it's actually got a space for two people. Anyway, the England-Wales game, which is coming up at the end of February, I believe, would be my suggestion that if everyone, four of us at least, can gather around and if everybody fancied it... come and watch it round mine and we can try to do the technology and see if that works. I'm just checking there's no Gloucester game that day as well, because that's always...
There is. It's Northampton away.
Oh, that's fine. Well, we're not going to that, so that's fine.
And it's got a slightly early kickoff, quarter to three.
Quarter to three, yes.
So that the quarter to five kickoff at the Principality doesn't clash. I do believe, though, that Gloucester Hartbury are playing Saracens at King's Own that day.
That day. You'd imagine that'd be an early kickoff as well, though, wouldn't you?
Well, I've got it down as a 3 o'clock, but that would just be stupid. If you're going to bring the girls to King's Own, don't clash with England.
Don't clash with England and also don't clash with Gloucester.
Well, yeah. so you would hope that they try and do something. If the Northampton game is on, even if it's only on PRTV, if they get the girls in 1 o'clock,
yeah,
kind of, you know, 12:30 kickoff, because the Italy Ireland's on as well. So if they
no one cares about that, no, Jim.
They could have an early kickoff for the Gloucester Hartbury v Saracens game.
Yes,
and then people can kind of go into the bar and watch the Northampton game and then stay in the bar to watch the Wales-England game, which would obviously help the club out massively if you've got people there all day.
Mm. Or alternatively, come back to mine and we can watch it in the warm on a sofa.
We could be hosted. Maybe we could like compare an event at King's Own.
God help. No, they ain't going to do that, is they? No way in a million years. Oh, dear. Anyway, it was a nice thought. We'll look into it. I think it might be an interesting thing to do at some point. Probably not a Gloucester game. I think it will probably be a bit too much for a Gloucester game. I think
we'd be a bit too passionate, wouldn't we?
There's no way in a million. I mean, let's be fair. England, Wales, I think we're all pretty passionate anyway. So that's probably more passion than you really need to see on a Saturday afternoon, but certainly not Gloucester. I don't think it will be a good idea in the short term. Also, it just means that we don't swear and shout at players that we might in the future want to interview.
Yeah. Probably Super Saturday is probably not a good idea, is it? The 18th of March, because we'll have watched Italy beat Scotland and then we'd have watched France beat Wales and we'd be all a bit excited and giggly than the game against Ireland.
I like your term, excited and giggly, because that would be, for me, I think, isn't that the technical term for 7 points in?
Excited and giggly?
Yeah.
We'd be a lot more than 7 points in. after two rugby matches, would be about three bottles of red in, probably.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, on that note, thanks very much, Jim. Snowy obviously couldn't join us. He obviously had a very nice tea.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, so we'll reconvene after the weekend. We've got Saracens, no good, on Friday. What could go wrong? And we will reconvene next week and talk about our brilliant win and return to form with three more rolling wall tries. That's normally how it works.
Yeah, well, you did, you know, Irish did beat Saracens.
They did.
The week before we beat them.
Yes.
So
that means
we should be better than
beat
Irish,
Saracens.
And therefore we should, yes.
Yes, that's how all sport works.
Brilliant.
Excellent. Right. Thanks, Jim.
Ciao.